But if we sacrifice ourselves and get burned out in the process because we're not compensated appropriately, we can't afford, I'm not exaggerating, I know therapists that can't afford to live because of the rate they're charging. And I just don't think that's fair to the therapist. And it's ultimately not fair to the clients because the therapist is not going to be as sharp or as dialed in. They're going to be exhausted. They're going to be frustrated on some level. So I don't think we do a service to anyone when we're not getting compensated fairly.
Welcome to Everything is Clinical, a podcast for mental health clinicians. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Jackie Dunnigan, a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm also an AAMFT approved supervisor. And I do believe that when it comes to the therapy room, everything is clinical. I hope you get as much value out of listening to these discussions with various seasoned professionals as I did in having them. Dr. Wendy Dickinson-Ragland joins us today to discuss some considerations when setting clinical fees. Wendy is a licensed psychologist. She received her PhD in counseling psychology from Georgia State University. She is also the founder and CEO of Grow Counseling, Grow Counseling Network, Grow Restored, and the Right Counselor website. Wendy, today I'm super excited that you are discussing this topic of how to set your rate, kind of considerations for it. I think this is one of those topics that I think a lot of people have a lot of questions, thoughts around. I even did a little bit of internet research.
I love it.
It was a lot of bad advice. I'm just going to put it at that. I mean, people can do their own research, but I was really disappointed by what I found.
This is one of those topics that I think our three-year-old would say, as she would say, it's tricky, right? I'm excited to dive into it.
First of all, session fees. Who determines it? What are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think this depends on where you're working and what kind of a setting. If you are in more of an agency setting, then you're probably going to have the fees determined by the agency. And so obviously you would defer to whatever they tell you to charge. If you're in private practice, you probably have some more flexibility. And then there's another layer of if you take insurance or you have a large number of third-party payers, there's a lot of stipulations that comes along with that, which we probably won't really dive into today.
Right.
We're going to talk more about self-pay rate. But in private practice, typically the clinician sets the rates. I think it depends a lot on where your location is. I think that demographic of population makes a big difference. So if you're in, you know, I'm from Florida, so there are a lot of beach towns in Florida, which are fantastic. But if you're in a beach town or you're in a rural area, or you're in Atlanta or you're in New York, those rates are going to be really dependent based on the demographic that you're serving.
I think it is something that does vary quite a bit. What are your thoughts about what clinicians should think about whenever they're thinking about setting their rate?
My approach is that it's a combination of experience and expertise with supply and demand, a real market issue.
Mm-hmm.
And typically to that point, when we started our practice 15 years ago, I had seen most rates set only on expertise and experience. And within the Atlanta market specifically, there were these really specific rate points for sessions. So it was, I can't remember exactly what it was, but if you were pre-licensed, you know, it was sub 100. If you were post-licensed, psychologists charged 120. And I think a lot of that was influenced from insurance because we were coming out of a very heavily insurance-based time frame and more people were moving to self-pay rate. And so it was a little bit of the wild, wild west. Yeah, everybody was trying to figure out what to do. I really think that there's a huge piece of this that relates back to the marketplace. So again, it factors involved such as the demographic you're serving, the specialization that you have. I think it has to do with how many clients you need. If you're trying to build a caseload and recruit 50 clients, then you may want to lower your rates so you can get more clients in the door. Or if you've got plenty of clients and you're really not taking anyone new, you don't need to be as accessible to everyone out there. Now, that's not the same thing as saying your fees are going to exclude a whole group of people that can't afford it. I'm a big fan of doing pro bono work and sliding your rate for people that need it. So I think the caveat here is, even if we talk about more escalated rate, I'm always encouraging those I supervise and direct to consider, you know, who do you need to slide that for? When do you do that? When do you offer a completely pro bono rate in order to make sure that services are available to everyone?
You said about kind of way back whenever you started the practice, that there were kind of some benchmarks. Where would you go for that? Or how did you know?
I think that's a great question. I wish there was a website that listed it all out and everybody was on the same page. But again, because it's kind of community specific, I think you really have to figure out what other people in the area are charging. And that gives you kind of a sense. Again, right. Sort of a normal curve you're looking at. There are going to be some people that are really much higher, some people that are lower. I think one of the things that we need to address in the conversation is like this imposter syndrome of people who charge a low rate because they don't feel like they're worth something higher. But if you look at a normal curve, you're going to kind of find most rates collect around a certain price point. And so that's where I would start in terms of kind of understanding what a typical rate is for your area. You can go to a marketplace listing like Psychology Today or The Right Counselor. Usually they have rates listed. Sometimes it's a range. So that's helpful information to have as well as you're making these informed decisions about where you want to set your price point.
Right. That's all good information. And it is one of those things where I think it can be a little tricky to find out. And I don't know if you're really going to figure out what the true average rate is, but you do get a ballpark. And I think Psychology Today and The Right Counselor is a really good one for getting that information. You hit so many points that I want to make sure we hit. But I'm curious, what's your story, your rate story? And your supply and demand story. I should add that in there too.
About 15 years ago, went into private practice, and I was really in an individual practice for several years before we started hiring people for Grow Counseling. And there's an element there that I'll come back to in terms of being in a group versus an individual practice. I did kind of the informal survey of my friends that were in private practice and asked what they were charging. And typically it seemed like psychologists in Atlanta were in the 120 to 180 range, call it. 150 That's was kind me. Of a midpoint. And so I started there at 150, recognizing that not everybody who called was going to be able to pay 150. And one of the things that I did, and I've encouraged other people as they've started their rate journey to consider, is how many people are you turning away or turning off by what your rate is? Part of that depends on how you talk about your rate, how you have that right. conversation around money. But if in general your feedback is, hey, that's too much, or that's way more than I was expecting, or I can't afford that, that's some feedback about the marketplace, right? You want to consider how many people you're turning away or they're turning away from you because of your rate. And then balancing that with how many clients do you need. You may early in your career, as I did, slide for a lot of people because you wanted to get people in the door, right? After my caseload stabilized and I had kind of a core group of clients, in the same way I probably wasn't going to come in at 7 a.m. to see a client, I was probably not going to slide for every single client that came in the door. And I recognized that I may not be that person for them. And so my role is to kind of help them hold their hand until they get connected with the right person. So I think embedded in that is the idea that the higher your fee is, the more people you're probably going to turn away right. and or connect them with other resources. So this is where the group piece came in really helpful for me. When I started hiring clinicians, naturally, they were coming out of school. And so their rates were going to be a little lower because they needed more clients at this point. And so what we've always had at Grow is the structure where we had different tiers. We've got a group of people who need fewer clients, have more expertise, are charging higher rates. And then we've got, you know, several tiers all the way down, sometimes to interns, but often to like new professionals that are accepting a lot of clients. And so they charge less. So we're able to say, hey, we've got a great team and we can get you in at pretty much any price point. Tell us what you feel comfortable. pay. And when you ask that, a lot of times people are really honest about what they can afford and who they feel like they need to see. So obviously that is probably a little more unique to my rate journey than, not everybody out there is going to start a group practice. But I think that same idea can apply. You could have a trusted network of people that you refer to. As I built my caseload and refined my specializations, I continued to raise my rate periodically, probably no more often than once a year. Sometimes it would be longer than that. So one of the questions I ask when raising my rates or when talking to somebody else is, what's the next unique price point? For example, you could go from 130 to 135. Anybody who can pay 130 can pay 135.
Right.
Most people who can pay 130 can pay 150, right? So you're not really getting into a new price point. A lot of times you'll see clinicians raise their rates within a price bracket commensurate with inflation. You know, it's like every year, maybe a therapist adds $5 to their rate and they do it across the board for every single client. I like to think about what that next price point is. So maybe, for example, if you were charging 130, 180 feels like a next price point, right? Not everybody who can pay 130 could pay 180. And you could consider that as your new rate for new clients and not raise your rate on some more existing established clients. Maybe for those clients, you creep it up in smaller increments just to kind of keep it with inflation, you know? That's an approach that I like because I feel like there is an agreement piece that you've made with clients. If you were to bring them in at 130 and then all of a sudden raise your rate to 180, feels like it creates some trust issues. I typically keep people at whatever the standard rate is that they've come in at.
Right.
And then just take new clients at a higher rate. And typically what you'll see is like as clients thin out, you sort of then your average rate sort of increases that you're getting from people. You go to a new price point and the same thing happens. But I will say through my rate progression, I now charge $475 an hour. Typically take two new clients a year. And I still have clients I see for $100. There's still people that pop up on my caseload that I've never increased their rates. So that's kind of the journey I've walked. And I do have quite a few people, as you can imagine, who inquire about new appointments and are shocked at my rate. Part of what I'm prepared for in the conversation with them and just kind of helping them understand where my rates are and why they are what they are and what my specializations are and that we have a great team and I want to help them figure out. And most people, by the time you walk through all that with them, are really grateful for the support and for helping them find somebody that feels like a really good fit.
That's a lot of good information. And my rate journey is very similar to yours. I like what you said about think about not just like $5, but almost kind of like if you're thinking of the real estate market where you see like these cutoffs and bumping up to that. Because when you think of that supply-demand equation, there's not a hard and fast equation for that. Like you said, you're going to say no to more clients. They're not going to be able to afford it. But if your caseload is maintaining, that's a pretty good indication that you're at a good point. Because like you said, you're bringing on just a couple of clients a year. Just as we were preparing for this, I had a text exchange between a potential client. She said, I'd love to be able to afford your rate, but I just can't right now. But if you could give me some referrals, I do think that's an important and valuable part. And it's a meaningful part of the work we do being helpers.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it, you know, it's a good example of people will tell you. They'll tell you something you said reminded me. I was listening to a continuing education workshop last year for my hours. It was an ethics one on rate. Most of it was kind of stuff we're talking about today or things we've thought about. But one of the things that was interesting that I haven't heard anyone say quite this crisply was this person was a big proponent of you can charge more for a specialization by client. So for example, I know Jackie, you specialize in couples. You can charge more for that as a couple's rate as a specialization than you would for general therapy. And I bring that up because I think it's such an interesting and complex, tricky topic.
Right.
I think embedded in that is that question that I ask around, do our rate reflect a better or less good service to the client? Or are we providing services within our scope of competence? And so the rates are more a marketplace issue. So I wouldn't go so far as to say I took issue with his approach, but I wish in the continuing ed we had had more time to unpack that, because especially as beginning clinicians, a lot of times you'll hear the rate tied to a statement like, well, I'm just starting out and I don't have as much experience.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's true, you may not have a specialization where you are known for a certain kind of work in a certain kind of circle and a go-to referral for people. My question would be, is what we're really saying you're not as good of a clinician? And in that case, what do we need to do to make sure that you're a great clinician for the clients you see, right? I think tied to that is some imposter kind of stuff. I think tied to that is some messages we get in graduate programs that may even be tied to professors' imposter stuff about sort of levels of experience and how you can really be helpful, but later in your career. And so I think it's really something that's worth unpacking, is what are these levels of things that these complexities that are wrapped up in the rate that we charge. Some of those conversations are going to be more personal and may need to happen in supervision or with your own therapist for you to be confident saying, yeah, I provide good service and this is what I feel like that is worth.
Well, so what is your thought about charging more? Because I do know clinicians who do that, who will say, I have this rate for couples and I have this rate for individuals. Now, my rate's the same. So I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are around that.
So my thought is that I tie it to the structure of the therapy and not my expertise. In other words, I don't do many assessments, but if I was doing an assessment, those are time intensive, they are work intensive, they're intensive. It's just a lot, right? And so for me to block those hours out on my schedule, a lot of times that looks like writing at night or on the weekend. There's just a lot of pieces involved in that. And so you charge more for an assessment than you would probably for, you know, one-to-one therapy. In the same way that if you're seeing a complex family system and it's going to require time outside of the session to consult or document or maybe do some phone calls with parents, that's kind of a different structure than a one-on-one session where somebody comes in, they're there for 50 minutes and then they leave. So I would think about it personally. I would think about it from my caseload as kind of how much collateral work is this going to take and does my rate reflect that? But again, this agreement up front with a client about this is what you're asking me to do beyond what a typical session would be, and here's what the structure of that, I think it's really important to provide that up front. I'm not sure I have a fully formed thought on this charging different rates for specializations. Again, I think that there's probably a pathway to that. My initial hesitation, I think, is around not so much the message of I have a specialization in this and so I charge more, but like, what are you really saying about the things that you don't specialize in and what your areas of competence are, what kind of services you're providing for those, and why are you doing those things if that's not your area of specialization? I think there's very legitimate answers to that. I just would want to kind of think through all those pieces before I started quoting a rate around a specialization.
Yeah, I think no matter what your rate is, you should feel that it is a fair rate for compensation. And I feel like I'm well compensated. I feel like I'm fairly compensated. Because of that, I don't have any resentment or irritation if I go above and beyond for clients who, you know, maybe need some extra consults. And at a certain point, you know, when a phone conversation is turning more into to something that you should be charging for versus just, hey, quick question, and particularly administrative stuff. But I'm working equally hard, whether I'm seeing an individual client or whether I'm seeing a couple. I'm all in.
Right.
I'm all in
right.
during that time.
Right.
And so, and, you know, the other thing is most of my work now is remote. And I think some people even look at it of charging a different rate for remote versus in person. I'm the same therapist. I'm still showing
yes.
up. I'm doing the same work.
And if you felt like remote was a second rate way of providing services, then my question there would be, what are your thoughts about doing that, offering
right.
a second rate kind of less helpful form of service to somebody if we didn't feel like virtual was as equally as helpful?
100%. 100%. And I would fully jump into that argument.
I think we tend to focus on like the higher end of rates, like how much to charge. But something you said that I think is really important and a little bit of a passion spot for me is therapists that undercharge and then get burned out, right? Because they're seeing so many clients every week that they can't go the distance. And I feel like, you know, if we went to our lawyer and they told us what they charged, or we went to a real estate agent and they told us what they charged, or our doctor's office, our first response isn't typically like, hey, but here's my story, can you slide for me? We're in such a unique industry where people feel like that they deserve the services, or they're, you know, need the services. And so therefore we should provide the services.
Right.
And I think we all, to be clear, went into the field because we want to help people. And so the goal being we want to, you know, help people get better, move to the next step, whatever. But if we sacrifice ourselves and get burned out in the process because we're not compensated appropriately, we can't afford,
right.
I'm not exaggerating. I know therapists that can't afford to live because of the rate they're charging. And I just don't think that's fair to the therapist. And it's ultimately not fair to the clients because the therapist is not going to be as sharp or as dialed in. They're going to be exhausted. They're going to be frustrated on some level. So I don't think we do a service to anyone when we're not getting compensated fairly.
I totally agree. And I think it is a, you know, it's a different podcast, but I do think it's an industry issue of this belief that we shouldn't be making much money as clinicians. And it absolutely makes no sense. And I don't think it serves our clients well. I think you should feel comfortable with what your rate is. I think you should feel absolutely comfortable,
yes,
with what your rate is, given your credentials, given your caseload. But yeah, you shouldn't be, it shouldn't be a pain point. I want to ask you, you mentioned a little bit about how some people will do like a little increase each year for existing clients. I know there are people out there who've talked about, because I know I've supervised people who've brought to me about, how do they bring up to the client that their rate is raising?
You want to feel comfortable having a money conversation with people, because this is another side podcast probably, but I go back to this belief I have that everything is clinical. So this isn't a separate conversation from therapy. This conversation about money affects your therapeutic relationship with the client. And so you want to have it in a therapeutic way. You want to think about the intro, why you're doing it, how you arrived at the rate. So you're going to have clients that see your value, they can afford it, they're happy to pay, and it's a non-issue. You're going to have other people where it overlaps their clinical issues, right? Around abandonment, around trust issues, around maybe more clearly money itself and the meaning of that. And so you want to be ready, not just with your general statement, but also with your therapeutic thoughts about how this is going to affect that individual client based on their presenting concerns and family of origin stuff and all of that. So the first thing I would say is practice and be thoughtful. You can't be cavalier or unaware about it. So I would say practice ahead of time, have a verbal conversation, and then do what you say you're going to do.
Right. No, and I'm like you. I want to have that conversation generally in a session, bringing it up. And that way, there is room for how they receive that information. And I think that's a big piece of it. What about sliding scale? How do you determine when, how to do a sliding scale rate or a hardship rate?
You know, to my knowledge, there are very few industry standards about this. I think one of the important things to think about is as you're building a caseload, looking at clients not as a short-term client, but as somebody that might be with you for a while. Some of the things that I consider, I mentioned this earlier, but sort of how someone is making choices about their money. If they're asking me to slide and that's because they have a high car payment and they've chosen to like go on a fancy vacation, ultimately, I think that creates some resentment for the therapist as they're hearing about all these really glittery, sparkly things and knowing that they slid their rate when somebody else could have used a sliding spot and that client didn't really need it. So, you know, I've heard therapists collect information. How much do they make? What are their debts? like a real structured approach. I personally don't want to be responsible for all of that information. And I think that only tells a certain part of the picture. I really talk more about kind of generally, why are they feeling stressed? Why did they feel like they need a hardship? And typically what I say is, my lower sliding scale is this. Is that something you could afford? And if they can't, I'll refer them out. But if I'm able to meet them at a lower rate, and occasionally that's nothing. Like sometimes I'll set a hardship rate for people that are, you know, can really afford nothing, but I want to give back in some way, where I feel like, hey, I'm probably the best person with the specializations to help you. And so there maybe isn't a good referral source. And so I save those spots for people that I feel like are unique in some way and really need that spot.
And I think you just hit one of the things that I think is so key when you're discussing if you should slide or not, is part of our role as therapists is to empower people. So helping them to make those decisions is huge. And I think sometimes we can get in the way of that when it comes to the rate conversation, particularly if we make assumptions. What are your thoughts around stipends? And particularly if you believe that there's maybe any obligation or considerations on the therapist side when they have a client who's receiving part of their services paid by some charitable organization?
That is a great question. And I have a bit of a unique perspective because we do run Grow Restored. So I've been on the counselor side, the provider side, and I've also been on the nonprofit side. And you know, I think generally my views align. I would say, you know, I am never personally going to take a stipend for a client and charge them my full rate. So, and to back up, when we say stipends, we're typically talking about like a third party payer, a nonprofit, a church, a school right. that's supplementing some kind of counseling fund for the client. So maybe they say, there are different ways that can happen, right? So maybe they say, this client has $1,000 and there's just a total cutoff and you decide how that money's used with a client. Or maybe they say, we're going to pay for X number of sessions at X rate. So that's kind of already baked in if you agree to that. So there are kind of different ways that that might look, but I'm not going to charge a nonprofit my for-profit rate in the marketplace, right? Like, I just don't feel, let me rephrase that. I feel really good about partnering with a nonprofit at a lower rate.
I actually liked how you said it the first time. I'm just going to say that, Wendy. I liked how you, I thought that really gives it a lot of clarity the way you said it the first time.
I don't feel good about charging a nonprofit my full rate. That's not the rate for a nonprofit. It's a marketplace rate for somebody that can afford that. And so I would, again, kind of go back to, what does this client need? How much is this nonprofit or church contributing? How far can I make these sessions go with the client? I'm real passionate, and sometimes the stipulations from the organization preclude this, but I'm real passionate in the client contributing something. It could be $5, it could be $25, but I just feel like it really helps with buy-in and commitment and, you know, them showing up and feeling good about that they've participated in the process. And so I feel like this is this overlapping Venn diagram of, I slide some, the organization contributes some, and the client contributes some. I kind of go back to what my lower sliding scale rates are when I work with a charity. So I would typically be on the very low end of what my sliding rate mm-hmm. is.
I think that's some good insight. I think is really what comes down to more of an ethical question than anything else. I think one people have to answer for themselves, but I think it's an important one. Just to kind of summarize, what would be your key do's and key don'ts on this particular issue?
So the things I would suggest are, look at the marketplace, try to get an idea of what other people are charging, get to a point where you're comfortable with what you're charging based on the marketplace and your experience and specialization. Things I wouldn't do, I wouldn't source from a place of scarcity when you set your rates, or inadequacy or inferiority. Make sure that you've done that work to believe that the service you have is valuable and that you deserve to make an income and a living that's comfortable, at least as a therapist. Something to do would be to build up that referral network. If it's in-house and you're in a group practice, that's great. If not, really do your diligence to make sure you have people at lots of different organizations, lots of different price points. I think do be strategic about when you raise your rates and how much. Think about those unique price points. Is it a unique price point raise, or is this just kind of a cost of living inflation raise for everyone? And do be prepared to have the money conversations in a way that's clinically relevant and thoughtful based on what the client's presenting issues are.
Is there anything else you would throw in there that we didn't cover that you feel like needs to be mentioned?
Obviously, a lot of this can be embedded in our own experiences with money and our own, you know, stories around a lot of things. And so I do think this is where I would make the plug for therapists to have a therapist. I think yes. Some of this is relevant for supervision for sure. And some of it goes a little deeper than that, right? When it taps into I'm really uncomfortable factor or an ick factor or an inflated, like, but grandiose factor. Those, I think, are conversations that are more appropriate for therapy and can really be quite productive with an individual therapist.
Totally agree. Thank you. I think you did an awesome job on a very talked about topic, or sometimes not talked about topic, but one that I think people have a lot of thoughts on. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Music for this podcast has been provided by audionautics.com. This podcast is purely informational and is not a replacement for supervision. Thank you for listening.